Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. We're broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. This is Fanny Crawford.
And Stacy Okowski,
your radio hosts.
Yes, we did that well, Fanny. Good morning.
Did I say today is April 6th? It's not really, but this will be airing on April 6th, Monday, April 6th.
April 6th.
And we hope all our listeners are healthy and holding up.
Yes.
In these difficult, confusing times.
Well,
our theme today is water.
Water.
And we want to thank Andy Offutt Irwin for allowing us to use his Tarry Here original composition that started out this show.
We love starting with Andy's beautiful song. Someday we're going to have to do a trio with Andy and sing that. That would be, I don't know what he would think about it, but he has no control over it, whether we sing along or not. So knowing Andy, he would probably enjoy it. And he would probably give us some notes, right?
Oh, no doubt.
I almost fell over. So I did a thing yesterday, first time ever. I've been on Facebook ever since I lived in Arkansas, which was before 2012. We lived in Arkansas for 6 years. And I just yesterday, for the first time ever, I attempted something that I didn't know you could do on Facebook. That's how dense I am at times. I actually videoed a little science thing and put it up as a watch party.
Oh.
And there were a few people who actually saw it. At first, when it was up there, I wrote a comment myself and said, well, I can see me, but I can't hear me. And then Terry wrote, oh, I can hear you. So all I had to do was touch a certain part of the screen and sound came on. But it was interesting. And I did it. I was inspired to do it. You'll just love this because you know how I talk about anything. I was inspired to do it because I've been doing this thing about air pressure and blowing up a balloon in the bottle. Then I thought, wow, for young children or adults or anybody, there is another extension to that. And so what I did was I blew up the balloon in the bottle. And I showed whoever's watching that I had my finger over the hole once I did that. And so the balloon stayed blown up. But then I stuck the end of the bottle where the hole is in a bowl of red liquid, water, food coloring in the water.
Yeah.
And took my finger off the hole. And so then air pressure from the outside could push down on the liquid and push it into the bottle with the balloon and the balloon would deflate and the bottle would fill up with this colored liquid. It was so exciting the first time I did it that I couldn't, because it was a brand new thought. And at my age, if you can have a brand new original thought, that's pretty good.
You are full of original thoughts.
Yeah, I know, but sometimes they're not scientific.
Sometimes reticent to share them.
Right. I want to also give you a hint. Do you know a name, Papa Joe Gaudet?
Yeah, we've been talking about him.
Yeah, well, I want to remind you, you got to get him. Have you watched any of the stories?
A long, long time ago, recently.
Okay, well, he comes on every morning at 10 o'clock. And every evening at 10 o'clock, and he does a children's story in the morning and a adult story in the evening. And you know, I've watched a number of his stories, and I think he's just amazing. I mean, he looks like a, you know, he's older, he's got a lot of hair, a long beard, great facial expressions. And when he's telling a children's story, he reminds me of a of an elf, of somebody who just appeared out of the woods and is talking to you. And he's, his eyes sparkle, and he makes these wonderful faces and sound effects and everything.
He sounds just like Stash Stokowski.
Yeah, he's more animated than I am, you know, telling. And then last night I watched him tell Mary Culhane, one of my favorite stories.
Yeah,
and it was scary. I think he's in a traveling van, and not a great big one, but and where he was parked last night, maybe it's in his backyard or someplace, but it was raining. And so you could hear the rain on the roof, and it wasn't pouring down, but it was pretty steady. And the effect was very eerie. I was glad that I was in my living room and my wife was nearby, because if it had been in that dark room all by myself, I would have been looking for a candle.
Well, okay. So anyway, well, I will listen to him again.
Yeah,
it's been a while.
He's on Facebook.
Okay.
10 in the morning, 10. It's got called the watch party. Anyway, boy, that's a lot. and I also found, looking through my papers, I also found a kind of a poem I wrote about Jonesboro when we were both there 2 years ago, I think, or maybe 3 years ago, where I told the story in the tent, and then you did also.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Uh-huh.
Anyway, if we have a minute or two at the end, I want to read this poem.
Okay. Sounds good.
And well, I figured I would ask your permission since you're in charge.
I love this lip service you give.
I think, isn't that great? You're a boss again. And you have
so to speak.
You have complete control over your entire
staff.
Staff, yes. Oh, that's nice. And I'm a staff person instead of just a worker bee.
No control. Absolutely no control. Okay. Shall I tell a story?
Yes,
or are
please.
We going to keep going for a while?
No, please tell a story. I'm anxious to hear whatever you're going to tell.
Okay. Well, I want to use this time today, talking about water, to describe my relationship and history with water.
Whoa.
And I need you to give me feedback on this, because I'm going to do this, the phrase is publicly, theoretically, this is public.
Right.
But, since we know we only have 7 listeners, the next time there will be more. Okay?
Yeah.
So the story opens long before my birth, long before my parents' birth. I am a Crawford, a Barnes, a Williams, a Cooper, a Peoples, a Lott, a Morris, Harris, Wexner, Hochheiser, and a Rosa Pep. Water brought my forebears to the place they needed to be for me to exist.
Wow.
The earliest known history from my dad's family is a written narrative left by my dad's grandfather, Thomas Barnes, about his father's escape out of slavery in Hagerstown, Maryland, to freedom in Lewistown, Mifflin County, Pennsylvania. That escaped slave, Henry Barnes, my great-great-grandfather, was born enslaved along the James River near Richmond, Virginia, and taken to Hagerstown in Maryland as a child. As a young man, he likely traveled the region's waterways to freedom. That was 1835 or so, from Antietam Creek or possibly the Potomac River in Washington County, making his way on foot, on foot or by boat for at least part of the way, north to the Juniata River in South Central Pennsylvania at Lewistown. Now, the stories from that handwritten family history by my father's grandfather were my bedtime stories when I was a child. And some of our listeners have heard me tell, you have heard me, Stash, tell these stories. And they helped make me who I am today. I've been hearing them all my life. Thomas Barnes, Henry's son, married Mary Bell Peoples Lott and their daughter, named Mabel Cinderella, honest, grew up on Cattaraugus Creek in Olean, New York, in southwestern New York. Mabel Cinderella married a light-skinned African-American, John Calhoun Crawford, whose family had fled Tennessee. An uncle of his, Anthony Crawford, was murdered there, lynched by a white mob. According to family lore, the Crawfords fled up the Tennessee River to the Ohio, likely as far as the Wabash River and into Illinois. John Calhoun Crawford, my father's father, was a barber who eventually started a barbershop in Olean in New York, where he married Mabel Cinderella. Now, tucked among all these heart-stopping narratives, some of my dad's most exciting stories for five-year-old Fanny was about the flooding of Cattaraugus Creek every spring, when the Cattaraugus rose out of its banks into the family's front yard. This is the child's perspective. Now, my mother's family were English Jews on her mother's side and Austrian and Polish Jews on her father's side, who all came across the Great Water from Europe, steerage class, between 1820 and 1850, part of the great stream of immigrants who came through New York Harbor. One of my earliest memories is visiting Liberty Island in New York Harbor and my mother teaching me the song, the poem by Emma Lazarus on the bronze plaque at Lady Liberty's feet. Send me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shores. Send these, the homeless tempest tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. My parents met in Westchester County, New York, in Yonkers and New Rochelle, just north of New York City. Yonkers on the east shore of the Hudson River and New Rochelle on the Eastchester Bay side across the peninsula. But they soon moved to Philadelphia, where I was born, and grew up on the banks of the Schuylkill River. I was in my 30s before I was actually on the Schuylkill in a canoe. But that was not my first time in a canoe. I spent part of every summer outside Philadelphia on Whitmer Lake in Horsham, PA, and at Red House Lake in southwest New York State, not too far from Cattaraugus Creek, where my dad grew up. My first husband took me tramping through swamps and the reedy banks of streams and rivers, looking for frogs and crayfish and trout fishing in the Rocky Mountains. Now, some of you have met my current and final husband, Stosh, you know Jose.
He grew up— boy, the way you said that was scary. John could edit that out a little bit and we'd be in trouble.
He grew up lifeguarding. Jose grew up lifeguarding at pools and lakes across Maryland, teaching swimming and canoeing with friends and family in more states than I can count. We've been in a few canoes and kayaks together. But his favorite water stories are about the floods of Frederick County. Linganore Creek flooding Gashouse Pike, Carroll Creek flooding downtown Frederick over and over till the containment project that resulted in the downtown Creekside walkway that we all love in downtown Frederick. But of course, Carroll Creek is now flooding again. Water has its own narrative. Our daughter is all grown up now. And when I asked for her water stories, she reminded me of the pond. We called it a lake, but it's a very small lake. At the school where I worked, where we lived for 7 years of my daughter's life, in Luckett's, Virginia, near Leesburg. And the creek that feeds that pond near Stumptown Road in Loudoun County is a tributary of Catoctin Creek, one of the north flowing streams that meets the Potomac River at Point of Rocks on U.S. Route 15. My daughter talks about swimming at Gladen Pond, ice skating there in the winter, and sitting on the gravel beach with friends, watching muskrats, turtles, and herons. Waterways have given me hours and hours of story material and made me think more deeply about why I tell stories. In 2013, I discovered the headwaters of the North Fork of the Potomac River at Fairfax Stone between Thomas, West Virginia, and the Maryland state line. Now, I wasn't the first, not even the first storyteller at Fairfax Stone to sit there. I was in the company of five other women storytellers, and they taught me some water songs and chants, and we performed a few ceremonies asking the water's blessing and honoring that place where water flows miraculously out of the ground, sacred to many, many people for thousands of years. These rituals, these water rituals, are important. Believe me, I have been rained out, fled thunder and lightning, and huddled under umbrellas at storytelling festivals more than a handful of times. When water speaks, it only makes sense to stop talking and listen.
Wow. That's very nice. So my only constructive criticism would be, careful how you say that sentence about your present husband. And that, and you know, there's a comma that was missing this time. And you know, as they say in the, what do you call that? Editing.
Grammar?
Well, grammar and editing. When you're editing, make sure you have the commas in the right place.
Huh.
Anyway, that was a funny sentence.
Okay, what about your destructive criticism?
Destructive criticism.
That was your constructive criticism.
This is just a curiosity.
Yes.
I never heard anybody sing Emma Lazarus's poem.
Really?
No.
You never heard me sing it before?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
It was interesting because when you first started, I thought, what's she doing now? But it was good. I like it, you know, especially because it was a cappella.
Well, yeah.
And you have such good tone.
I couldn't play my recorder and sing at the same time. No, I did one time play guitar, but those days are gone.
So you admit that you have some limitations.
I'm all about limitations.
Right. Okay. So, well, folks, you're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour.
We have no idea what you're listening to. Okay.
Well, I think John sits in the other room and enjoys this so much. He has his cup of coffee and he just enjoys what we do.
He has earplugs in.
No, I think he really enjoys it. This is better than most stuff you can get on the radio and television in the morning. So, and there are no performances coming up that are really exciting.
Well, there's stuff online.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking about the series that we both are involved in.
Yes.
The Speak Story series in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, run by Adam Booth. And also Stories in the Round, headed by yours truly, Fanny Crawford, who
truly,
yeah, truly, who's done a marvelous job, and who I gave a suggestion to about a storyteller that she should get to come there. And
or you can knows? Watch him on Facebook.
Well, yes, on Facebook at 10 in the morning and 10 in the evening. Papa Joe Gaudette. That's the way I pronounce his name. I don't know how he pronounces his name. It's G-A-U-D-E-T. And I figure that he must be French or something like that. So it might be Gaudette or who knows what it is, but it's Papa Joe. And he's a very good teller. Very interesting.
Where does Looks he like live?
He lives in Berrigan, New Hampshire.
Hmm.
Or at least that's where he is parked right now. From watching a number of his stories in the last few days, he doesn't describe where he is. I have the impression he's in a van. It looks like he's in a van. And I think it's a traveling van of some kind. And it's just, the camera is focused on him. And anyway, it's a interesting picture. Because it gives me the impression that he is a traveling storyteller and he's parked someplace and decided to tell a story, which comes across real well.
Yeah, and that's one of your great plans is to was at one time to travel and tell stories and wear your monk's robe.
Yeah, but not that was probably just idle talk. Because the only way I would travel to tell stories is if Terry was traveling with me.
I was just going to say, yeah. You wouldn't be in a van and you wouldn't be without Terry.
No. In 2003, a good friend tried to get me to go on the road. And I told him, I'm just too selfish. There's no way in the world I would spend a week and a half away from my wife on purpose. I'd have to be in jail in order to do something like that. So,
Okay. Do you want to tell a water story?
I am going to tell a water story. I'm going to tell a water story about my father and myself. So here goes.
Okay.
My father was a gas construction worker. He put in gas lines in the streets of Baltimore. He repaired gas lines all over Baltimore and in Baltimore County and some of the other outlying areas that were serviced by the Baltimore Gas and Electric Company. And throughout my life, he was a foreman, but he also worked down in the ditches with his men. And his greatest pleasure was fishing. He could get a large thermos of coffee, two or three packs of cigarettes. He smoked Raleigh unfiltered cigarettes, which actually did him in. He died of lung cancer. But have a couple bologna sandwiches and get in a rowboat, go out of the inlet that led out to the bay, and he would get into the, just get out in the water and drift. He didn't even anchor the boat. He would just drift, put his line in the water. And I went with him a number of times when I was a kid. My mother would warn me usually on a Thursday and say, Saturday morning, your father's going to go fishing and he's going to ask you to go on Friday. So be prepared. I was not crazy about fishing. The act of sitting in the boat, putting a string into the water and waiting for some creature to bite on it seemed very boring to me. Maybe if I'd caught a fish the first time I did it, it would have been better. But anyway, but my dad was my best pal, and I loved my father dearly. He and I had a special relationship. I'm sure lots of sons would say that, but and he was always a great supporter in anything I did. So when he would mention to me on a Friday, going fishing tomorrow, well, where you want to go? And I would always say, yes, sir. and I would be bright and happy and go, because it was fun to be out on the water with them. Sometimes we'd be quiet for a long time. Can you imagine that?
Maybe an
hour or more. There was not a single sound made by a human voice, which was probably the only time in my life that's true. Because I even talk in my sleep, apparently. But and we would go out on the water. And this particular time, I'm going to tell you about something that was a number of things that happened on this trip. I'm not sure where we went to get the rowboat, but there are names that pop up in my head and different creeks and rivers and that. But we often went to the same place. We'd get there as early as possible. It would still be dark. But some of the places where you could rent a rowboat knew that fishermen like to be on the water as soon as possible and, you know, in daylight. And so Dad had always made arrangements ahead of time. We'd get out there, put our stuff in the boat, and we would leave from the shore in the dark and head out. Well, on this particular day, my dad always did the rowing. I am a small man. I was a small boy. And as a young boy, I was really small. I could never have rowed the boat. You know, I tried a couple times, and that was always fun for my dad to see me struggle with the oars. But we went out into the water. And Dad was just rowing. He would row for 15, 20, 25 minutes just to get away from being too close to the land. And he said he stopped rowing, stopped moving the oars, and sat staring over my shoulder. I was facing him in the back of the boat. And he said, "I want you to turn around slowly and look straight behind us." And when I did, I saw one of the most amazing sights I've ever seen in my life. I've never forgotten it, and it sticks out of my mind. All I have to do is hear a couple of words that would remind me of a sailing vessel. The sun was just coming up on the edge of the water in the distance, and there was a beautiful, I don't know what kind, whether it was a clipper or a schooner or what, but it was a sailing vessel, and they were raising the sails. We were probably maybe a half a mile away from them, but we sat there quietly and watched as this beautiful white ship, the men on the ship raising the sails, and then she moved in the water and sailed out into the bay. And it was just an incredible thing. I was so glad that I have that great memory and that I shared that with my father. I know that when we got home that day, I talked about it and some other things a lot, to the point where my mother got tired of hearing about this wonderful, beautiful white ship. But it was a beautiful morning, and once the ship was pretty much out of our interest, we went a bit further, and I wish I knew exactly where we were, but I never paid attention much to geography. But we had passed a small island in the mouth of the bay. It may not even been in the mouth of the bay, it may have been in the water that leads to Baltimore Harbor. But we had passed a small island and gone, I'm guessing maybe a half a mile past it. And that's where we fished for a while. Well, it started to get cool and cloudy, and the beautiful morning changed rather quickly. It started to rain. The wind came up, and my father had a rather large towel that he always took with him for fishing in case one of us went in the water to dry off. He gave me this towel and said, "Wrap this around yourself." And I sat behind him on the floor of the boat because the rain was beating down, and he said he was going to get us to the island that we had passed. The water got pretty rough, and my dad was a man that weighed at least 240, 250 pounds, about 5'10", and strong as an ox. He worked in the street for 43 years on his construction job, and he was extremely strong. And he rowed that boat against the wind, and the water seemed to be pushing us further and further out into the bay instead of making any headway. But he rowed vigorously, and I could hear him after a while. I could hear his sounds almost like he was panting. It was such an exertion. And finally, like we got close to the island, and he redoubled his efforts on the oars, and the boat touched the sand. And he immediately told me to get out of the boat, and he got out, pulled the boat up onto the sand a little bit, and collapsed. He was face down in on the sand, and I, for a few, probably only seconds, but which seemed like an eternity, I was afraid he had died. He was so exhausted that he couldn't move. And that didn't last long, a few minutes maybe, until I knew he was breathing. And he propped himself up then and said, let's move further away from the water. And we did. And shortly after that, he was kind of chuckling and laughing about how out of shape he was. And of course, I didn't think he was. And I, until this day, I'm sure that if he had been in any less shape than he was, we would have been washed out to the bay, and who knows what would have happened with that rowboat. The boats that we rented in those days to go fishing were not what I would call seaworthy. They were okay for being in the river and calm water, but anyway, we spent maybe 45 minutes on that little bit of land, and the storm passed, and he had gotten his breath back and everything, and we were able to, we had a sandwich, and I even drank some of his coffee, and we got back in the boat, and he said, normally I would just continue on today, but what do you think? You think we should head for the dock, and maybe we can stop and get an ice cream? And I was all for that, because we always stopped to get an ice cream on the way home from fishing. And I think as much as he loved fishing, and we still had plenty of hours left in the day, I think he had it that day. And he was just happy to be able to get back to the dock and turn the boat over to the owner and take us to an ice cream shop. And that's the story of my dad and myself out fishing and seeing a beautiful sailing ship and then fighting a storm. I did none of the fighting. I don't ever remember if I was upset and crying. I probably might have been. But over the years, as I've told that story a few times, I've been braver and braver. So my most vivid memory actually is sitting on that sandy little beach next to my father with my hand on his shoulder as he lay in the sand when I knew he was breathing and he was okay. I sat next to him, and the picture that always comes to my mind was that I was taking care of Pop.
That's a wonderful story. Oh, and scary.
Yes. Oh, it was. It really was. And I think as I told it to my childhood friends, it became even more and more scary. I think the waves got higher and the rain got harder coming down. And it actually, I do remember shivering. It was the temperature dropped, and it was very cold. But
yeah,
you know, and I heard my dad tell that story a couple of times. So of course, he told it differently. He never made himself the center of attention in stories unless they were funny. He was very good at poking fun at himself sometimes, and but that's my water story for today.
I love it.
Good.
I've heard other fishing stories, but I thought I remembered one about an island, but this was different in some way.
Yeah.
You may have told it before, but this time it was scary.
Yeah. Yeah. I spent a couple of times with my dad when there was very scary things happening. If we have time later on, I'll tell about a time when something really scary happened on the water. Not a very long story. We've been on the air for almost 33 minutes.
Very good.
I'm impressed. I was keeping time, did you?
No, well, I was keeping time. I had about 34 minutes, but 33 is fine.
Can you see me, by the way?
Yes, I can see you perfectly. So be careful. I'm keeping track.
Hey, how would you like to see a picture of my dad?
Oh, wonderful. Except our listeners can't.
I know, but just for you, to give you an idea. This is a picture that I just found recently. Just recently. And so anyway, here it is. Can you see that?
Yes. Is that his christening gown?
That's his christening gown in 1904.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
Huh.
And I almost said that's the only time he ever wore a dress, but that's not true. That's not true. Reminding me that my dad was at his club, the Democratic Club that he and two of his friends started about maybe 65 years ago. They sometimes put on entertainment for guests and for the wives at their bull roast and oyster roast that they held. And sometimes the entertainment involved grown men, large grown men, wearing skirts and dresses kind of thing and doing a chorus line kind of thing. And it was just hysterical to see these guys do that. Because when they were doing it, they were not like in their 20s. These were guys like in their 40s, maybe even early 50s. And
did your mother ever go to these performances?
Yeah, she did. I think she thought it was silly interesting, you know? I don't think she minded it so much because it was kind of so bizarre and it was very
wholesome.
Very wholesome and silly and just to get a laugh out of the people there. And I think it's something she would never have been a part of. But she admired my father that he didn't have any kind of pretensions about, you know, himself and could have fun with the guys. So, yeah.
I like hearing stories about the club. That seems just part of another era.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I probably told you that 50 years after my father and his two friends started that club, 50 years almost to the day, not quite, within a couple of weeks, I held a reunion there for myself and 10 of my childhood friends in that same club, and it was the last function anyone held in that club because the club was sold.
Yeah, actually, I remember that story.
Yeah, Yeah, so that was kind of a neat bookend story.
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you have for us?
Okay, I have a newspaper story that I just found by accident today when I was going through my, yesterday when I was going through my water story file, trying to decide what to tell.
Wow, you have a file.
I have a file. I have a lot of files, Dash. You should not be surprised. You've seen my paper stacks.
Yeah, I didn't think of them as a file.
Okay. Just piles.
Yes.
Well, this was in an actual file. So this is from the Herald Mail, the Hagerstown paper. I didn't date the clipping, so I don't know how old it is. It says August 11th, but we don't know what year. Pretty recent, I think. Anyway, the author of this story is Mark Madison, who's a regular contributor to the Herald Mail, and it's about the C&O Canal. I just thought it would be interesting. I know you like history.
I do.
So this is called The Canal and the Conservationist. The great set pieces of conservation are often remote events that occur in the majestic West, such as John Muir's camping in Yosemite or Theodore Roosevelt hiking Yellowstone. But 65 years ago, one of the most memorable events of the modern environmental movement occurred right here in Washington County. So he's talking about events from 1954. So if you add 65 to 94, you can tell me when this article was written.
If I add 65 to 54, that'll be easy. Just take 15 away from the 65 and add 50 to 54, and it'll make it 2004, and add 15 years, it's 2019.
Okay, so it was this year. It is pretty recent. I'm going to write that down on the article.
All right.
2019. Okay. So by 1954, the Chesapeake and Ohio Canal had fallen on rough times. Abandoned as a waterway 3 decades earlier, the land to the canal had been acquired by the federal government without a plan of action. A mere 22 miles of the 185-mile canal had been restored when a proposal was made in the 1950s to pave the canal as a motorized parkway. Yeah. Nothing could have better fit the times, these times, the 50s, because that was the heyday of the interstate highway system and efforts to bring Americans to nature by literally building roads to wild lands. A few conservationists questioned the wisdom of paving over nature to make it more accessible. The most famous of these was Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas, who regularly hiked to the canal. In a letter to the Washington Post, Douglas suggested that editors hike the canal before endorsing its destruction. And eventually, newspapermen and famous conservationists like Wilderness Society President Olaus Murie and National Parks Association President Sigurd Olson joined the band of 58 departing from Cumberland, Maryland on March 20th, 1954. So I'm guessing this was a March article in 2019. That would be my guess. The hike itself was part wilderness trek, part publicity tour, and part Earth Day precursor. There were lectures on natural history at night. Local groups came out to feed and cheer the band on. And the hikers were filmed and photographed by newspapers, Time Magazine, even newsreels. To pass the time, hiking 23 miles a day, the hikers even wrote a song, including this verse: "The blisters are burning and the tendons getting sore, while the shutter boys from Washington keep yelling, 'Just one more!'" It took 8 days to walk the 185 miles, and the brisk pace meant only 9 hikers, including Justice William O. Douglas, completed the entire hike to Georgetown. The publicity from our nation's legal and conservation luminaries hiking to save the canal killed the ill-conceived road project. Ironically, the father of the interstate highway system, President Dwight D. Eisenhower, ensured it would never become a parkway by making the C&O Canal a national monument in 1961. Great. A decade later, it became the Chesapeake and Ohio Canal National Historical Park. In the 1950s, C&O Canal Parkway had been built as, in the 1950s, C&O Canal Parkway had been built as planned, we might well have the equivalent of the GW Parkway running through Williamsport to Cumberland. The myriad anglers, bikers, hikers, birders, and strollers who enjoy the canal today owe a debt of thanks to the Supreme Court justice who judged in favor of nature 65 years ago. So thank you, William Douglas.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. If I were younger, I might want to do something like walk the, but I could not walk very far anymore. You know.
Well, you can walk a mile on the canal.
It is. I have walked some on the canal. In fact, for a number of years, in an earlier lifetime, I spent New Year's Eve and New Year's Day in a house with a relative by marriage who had a house above the canal. And I don't even know if I could find it nowadays.
Does he still live there? No,
he moved years ago. But this was in my running days. And so for 3 years in a row, I began every new year. On New Year's morning, I would get up first. There would be lots of people who had stayed overnight. There was always a party and lots of people sleeping in different places. And I would put on my running gear and go down to the canal and run on the path. And I would do at least 5 miles. And it was kind of a ritual for 3 years to start the year off all alone on that path with a nice hard run. And it was really a nice thing. I used to, when I was running in my younger years, and they weren't that younger. I was in my 30s when this was going on. I often liked to go out in the morning and be the only person on the road running, even at home. Before school, I often did it. And it was a good way to get my brain ready for the day. And once I was accused of doing my lesson plans on my morning run. And if I didn't get a chance to do a good morning run, my lessons were pretty stinky.
Your kids told you this?
Some people told me this. No. Kids never complained about my class being boring.
Probably not.
No, my class wasn't ever boring. I was an interesting teacher, and that's not my own evaluation. That's from students I've had, even students who didn't learn a whole lot. You know, I was told more than once by a student who got a low grade in chemistry who said, "Yours was my favorite class." And I would say, "Well, why didn't you study more?" And he said, "Oh, I didn't care about the chemistry, but your class was fun."
I was going to say, I'm sure even kids who didn't do well in chemistry learned things in your class.
Oh, they did. And sometimes they learned things that had nothing to do with chemistry.
That's right. You know? That's why they were fun.
Yeah, that's true. I did lots of interesting things. Interesting to me. And I found out over the years that if I was interested in it and I did it in front of the kids, a lot of them would find it interesting too. So That's my secret message to teachers today. Be interesting, like what you do, and the kids will like it too.
Very good.
Right. So, I really do have the urge to read this poem.
I think you should.
And it's not about water, except that there is water near Jonesboro, Tennessee.
There's water in Jonesboro, Tennessee. There's a creek.
Oh, I know. Well, I used the word near.
I even looked up the name of it at one point.
Wow. Going through papers, I found this, and I was amazed. I read it, and I thought, wow, I wonder who wrote that. And then I realized I wrote it. So, and it's the only time I ever did this, writing something about being in a place, in at least that I can remember. So here we go. Jonesboro, Tennessee. The tents, the crowds, the laughter, the quiet. Terry and I went for the stories. Happy, sad, funny, even strange. Fairy tales, true life. Oh, what a range. A range of emotions and feelings, stimulating thought. Teaching lessons that need to be taught. Happy, sad, funny, and others. Sharing the truth that we are sisters and brothers. Lynn Ford, Family Tales, Learned at Their Knee. Willie Claflin, Puppets, Stories, and Songs of Glee. Geraldine Buckley, A Pastor, An Accent, and Prison Makes Three. Sheila K. Adams, Whoa, Is That Really True? Megan Wells, Tales of King Arthur and A Table That's New. Jean Tagaban, Native American Lessons, We Need More. Jim May, A Teacher of Children, The Rich and the Poor. Oba William King, A Family of Eagles, A Lesson for All. Stosh Zielkowski, An Irish Tale, One So Very Tall. Andy Offit Irwin, At the End of the Day, Not Long Enough. Carmen D., Magical Mischief, True Childhood Stuff. Ed Stuyvesant, A Heavenly Party, Oh, What a Treat. Donald Davis, Homespun Humor, He Just Can't Be Beat. Fanny Crawford, Imaginary Friends, Perfectly Timed. There were tellers we missed, and some we would have liked to see once more. But filled with the magic of story, we drove away, secure in the knowledge we'd be back another day.
Am I an imaginary friend?
No, you told a story. You told a story in the tent up on the hill about the imaginary friends. Yeah.
Jep and Dank. Okay. And I just wanted to make sure our listeners know I'm not imaginary.
No, that line, Fanny Crawford, Imaginary Friends, perfectly timed. You had 10 minutes and finished it, as I recall, in 9 minutes and 51 seconds.
That's my signature style. Well, my signature style is to go 11 or 15 on a 10-minute story.
But there, you only get 10. And if you get the 10 minutes, they tell you you have to stop. And that's, you know, that's
kind of it.
Yeah. And you
did it. Took me a lot of practice to get that down to 10 minutes.
Right. Well, it was a wonderful story. It's one of my favorite stories because I never had any imaginary friends. The only imaginary things in my life were the ones that scared the hell out of me. Excuse me. The ones in my closet, in my bedroom, and the ones who walked up the steps late at night to the third floor and made weird sounds. So, what do you have next for us?
Well, I don't have anything planned for us.
Well, we have about 5 minutes, 6 minutes maybe.
Okay. I want you to give me more feedback on my water story. Put you on the spot.
Yeah. Well, you didn't introduce the women. I would like to have heard who they were.
You mean I didn't describe them?
You mentioned that you were there with this group of women.
Oh, the storytelling women.
Yes, but and then he went on, and I thought it would have been interesting to hear something about them. You know, why were they storytelling women, and what did they look like? What did they, you know, how did they sound?
And you're asking on behalf of all the listeners who will hear the story again, or you're asking because you haven't heard this story before and you want to know?
I did hear this story, I think, when I first met you.
Yeah, you heard a version.
I did. And I do remember that you told more about the storytellers.
Yeah, I told that if you heard it when you first met me, that was a story about Fairfax Stone, more specifically. And so I did tell a lot about the women then. So that we were gathered for a retreat near Eileen Evans' house at Timberline Cottages camp area. Their houses, their big expensive houses, but they call them cabins.
Well,
and we were there for a storytelling workshop, and Eileen took us to Fairfax Stone, which is 10 minutes from Timberline, and wanted us to know the story of the Chippewa grandmothers and the water walker, the Chippewa grandmothers who are water walkers, and who were doing environmental work to talk about American waterways and walking. In 2013, they walked the length of the Mississippi, 1,200 miles from the headwaters of the Mississippi. I can't remember the name of the lake right now, all the way to the Gulf of Mexico to publicize the importance of saving waterways and cleaning waterways of pollution and protecting the environment. And so the women that came together for that storytelling workshop were all accomplished performers one way or another. And I was a nervous wreck about being in a retreat with them because they were such powerful tellers and artists. But I had a wonderful time, and I learned a lot, and I learned the Nibi Wabo water song, which I didn't sing today, but I often sing when I tell versions of that story.
Right. And I remember that being very touching, and I was very impressed with you when you told that at the workshop.
That was at Andy's workshop. If it was the first time you met me.
Yes, it was.
Andy Offutter, when?
It was. And at,
shout out.
Susan Gordon's previous home.
Yes.
You know, and I made a big impact on Susan and Andy that day. You're waving to me?
I'm waving to John.
Oh, can he see
our radio manager is back.
Yeah. Do you want to hear the impact I made on Andy and Susan?
Yes.
The directions to get to her house. I was the first person to show up.
Yeah.
Andy was staying overnight. I drove up to the house, and the directions were to go to the right of the house to park. Well, I went to the right of the house, and I didn't see any place to park, so I kept going. And I drove around the house.
On the grass.
On the grass. Twice.
Yes.
And Andy and Susan watched me and wondered who this maniac was. And anyway, over the years, we've had a number of good laughs about that. And especially funny when Andy tells it, because he has that knack of telling funny stories. So I was quite embarrassed, but luckily enough, I was old enough, since that was only 5 years ago, that embarrassment doesn't last very long when you're old, because you realize you don't have time to worry about stuff like that.
Okay, then I will not be embarrassed to break in. Tell you that I love that story. I've never told it myself, but I might tell that story on you the next time we're in a group story.
I think that would be good. I think it's a funny story.
It is.
And I think it's the reason I like it so much is that it was completely honest. I didn't do it to be funny.
I know.
I was doing it to be Stosh.
And as soon as they met you, Dash and Susan, I mean, Andy and Susan knew that too. We have to close the show.
Okay.
Time is up. Do you have the closing words with you, or shall I make them up?
I do not have the words with me. I don't know whatever happened to the word. Wait a minute.
You're still driving around Susan's house on the grass.
I'm still thinking about it anyway. You know, I don't have the closing words. Okay. I don't know.
Well, this is your hosts, Fanny Crawford
and Stash Ziolkowski,
closing out the weekly Storytelling Hour on enlightenradio.org. Please join us next week. We'll be back telling more stories. You're going to say something?
No, go ahead.
The Enlightened Storytelling Hour brings together traditional and non-traditional tellers, creating a community of tellers and listeners to share and enjoy all of our stories.
Right. And I would just add a little postscript. Anyone who listens to our show has to be jealous, because you and I spend an hour each week having more fun than somebody our age should be allowed to have.
They also have to be crazy. Okay.
All right. Okay.
Thank you, John Case, our radio engineer.
Thank you, John. See you next week.
Okay. By the way, fall coming up, right up is a day's worth of John Prine, since he's in the hospital COVID,
wow.
You know. So anyway,
thanks
you can
for
look
doing
forward
that.
To that too. Let me stop the recording here. Hold on a second here.